The members of the House of Representatives Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform will come to order. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani. Chair Mariani.
President, I can barely hear you, but maybe it's my.
Vice Chair Frazier.
Present.
Representative Johnson.
Present, I'm having no trouble hearing you.
Representative Edelson.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Grossel.
Present.
Representative Hollins.
Present.
Representative Hewitt.
Present.
Representative Cleavorn. Excused. Representative Long.
Present.
Representative Lucero.
I know many probably would not want to hear me.
Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Novotny.
Present.
Representative O'Neill.
Present.
Representative Pinto.
Present.
Representative Poston.
Present.
Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh present.
Representative Vang.
Here.
Representative Zhang. Representative Zhang. That concludes roll call with 17 present.
Very well, there is a quorum. Members, this hearing is being conducted remotely, on an electronic platform pursuant to the Minnesota House Rule 10.01. The public can view that rule on the Minnesota House website, as well as to they can visit the committee page on the House website for instructions on how to access this meeting via streaming video, as well as instructions for participating in public testimony. Representative Frazier, would you be so kind as to move our March 16th minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I will move approval of the March 16th minutes.
Thank you. Representative Frazier moves adoption of the March 16th minutes. Representative Johnson, roll call, okay?
That would be fine.
Very well. Discussion? All in favor of adoption of the March 16th minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and the minutes of March 16th, this committee are hereby adopted. Members, today is emergency responder day. We've got a number of bills on that broadly addressing that topic. and I've got a frog in my throat this morning, so I apologize this afternoon. I apologize. We do have five bills, and so we're going to be pretty pressed to move through these bills. I'm going to ask the authors and the testifiers to be very, very brief. I think if we do, you know, 5 to 10 minutes on each bill, we should be fine. With that, members, we're going to start with House File 1015, Chair Marquardt. Representative Marquardt, the chair moves to refer House File 1015 to the General Register. Chair Marquardt, your bill is before us.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and really appreciate you hearing this bill. What this really does, it's a bill that would clarify the law and also clarify things for barn venue event centers in relation to the fire code, dealing with whether or not a sprinkler system would be required or not. And so, in the past number of years, there's been a number of historic barns that have been rehabilitated and refurbished and so forth and used as event centers for weddings and other community celebrations. And these facilities are licensed, they're inspected, they really promote to the rural economy. But there's been some questions and, quite frankly, some mixed messages that have come out from agencies and state law and so forth as to when do these venues need to have a fire sprinkler system. And so I really want to thank the Department of Labor and Industry, who's basically this is their language. And basically what it said is that if after August 1st, 2008, if you have altered your structure and have a capacity of 300 or more, you're required to have a fire sprinkler system. Otherwise, you would not. So that is what the bill says. I want to just cover one big thing, and that is safety. That's what this is all about, and that's the question. And not only is that a huge concern for our barn venue owners, but also for me. So here it is. These facilities are not restaurants. There's no cooking. There's no sleeping quarters. There's no open flames. There's no pyrotechnic techniques or fireworks going off, or you'll hear some examples of that type. These are open area, open barns. And they have fire extinguishers, they have fire alarms to warn people, and all of that. We know that a sprinkler system probably activates at about 155 to 160 degrees. So the fire alarms, everything else would have already been done. We know also that these owners would have to incur a cost of probably $200,000 to $500,000 to put that into a facility that operates from May through September. So the real question for the committee, really, and why this bill is here is, you know, is a quarter of a million to a half a million dollar cost, should that be required when, in a practical sense, it's probably going to have no impact on public safety? And so I do want to tell the committee, this is not a bill about structural things. It's not a bill about building inspectors and if they're qualified or not, which I've heard before. This really is about, we want to keep people safe, but let's do it in a way that we're not doing something that isn't going to make any difference at all in a practical sense, but yet could put someone out of business and cost up to a half a million dollars. So I do have for sure one testifier, if that would be all right, Mr. Chair, Dennis Davis, who's the owner from Erickson Farmstead.
Very well. Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Mr. Davis, please come forward, state your name for the record, and give us your testimony. And we're looking for brief testimonies today. Mr. Davis, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I will keep my my remarks very, very brief. Senator Marquardt did a fantastic job of kind of laying it out. My wife Julie and I purchased the Erickson Farmstead up near Isanti about 4 years ago. Julie and I purchased it with only one thing in mind, and basically that was to save this old farm from disappearing, like many other Midwestern farms have done. We opened in about 2018, did about six weddings the first year, and a few graduations. Since then, we nowadays we do about 50 weddings seasonally, with about 150 guests on average at each one of them. The one thing I'd like to touch on is the impact that we have to this small community up here. We bring in around 8,000 people to rural Isanti County. And considering the latest industry figures, that's almost $4 million to everything from hotels, catering, floral, all the things that are involved with weddings. We even contract with the Isanti County Sheriff's Department at every large event and have an on-duty deputy as our security to help with everything from safety to making sure that people are deterred from things like drinking and driving. I would encourage your approval of this bill to clarify the wording. And so we will continue to do all the safety measures that we have done and that we were required to do by the township. And I would just like to thank, again, as Senator Marquardt did, I'd like to thank the Department of Labor and Industry and the Department of Safety for working with us on the language of this bill. Thank you for your time, and I'll be around for questions at the end if anybody has any.
Super. Thank you, Mr. Davis. It sounds like a terrific business you and your spouse are running there. I do apologize. I do feel sorry for Representative Marquardt, though. He's been demoted a couple times during his testimony as a senator, but, you know, we'll redeem you somehow, Representative Marquardt. I do see an Adam Wallace, owner of Bloom Lake Barn, Representative Marquardt.
Yes, he would be available, could also be available for questions. I don't know how your time is running, Mr. Chair, so either way.
Yeah, we're pretty tight.
He's available for questions, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you, and thank you, Mr. Wallace, for willingness to do that. There are three individuals that have testified as public testifiers. So first we'll hear from Roger Axel. Roger Axel, please come forward, state your name for the record, give us your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Roger Axel. I am a retired building official, certified by the state of Minnesota, certified by the International Code Council, 30 plus years of experience. And one of my concerns with this bill moving forward is that neither Representative Marquardt or Senator Housley or her companion bill, none of these individuals or nobody has really identified what is the safety benefit to the public that this specific bill provides. It appears that the only people that will benefit is a select group of venue owners, and that is in direct conflict with the purpose of the state building code. I'm hearing a lot of conversation about these quaint and charming and lovely and wonderful buildings, but that does not address the fact that the state fire marshal inspected 11 sites on a random basis, generated a report in May of 2020, and all 11 of these sites failed. One of the owners has testified at previous committees stating that their site is fully compliant when one of the photos in the report has his site in it as one of the major deficiencies. Other photos show open flame, heaters, LP tanks. My concern is that everybody's concerned with how pretty these places look. Nobody is looking at the fact that they're requesting to put 100 more plus people in a building, and the owners have no responsibility to the general public to protect them from fire. Whereas anybody else building a similar function structure in the state of Minnesota is required to comply with the same building code. So we're creating a select group that is giving a special pass that they don't have to comply with the code. And the state fire code, state building code is applicable statewide. So nobody's addressed the specific benefit to the general public, not just a select few of owners. Thank you, sir. And I'm available for any questions you want.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Axel. And Representative Marquardt, in a minute after we finish with the other two, I'll circle back and have you respond to that particular observation, if you would, please. Next, we have Chad Iverson. Please come forward, state your name for the record, and give us your brief testimony. I'm not seeing Mr. Iverson.
Hello.
There you are. Yeah. That's quite all right. Please state your name for the record and give us your quick testimony, please.
No. My name is Chad Iverson. I've been a building contractor for over 25 years and a venue owner since 2017. So my question is, when they tell you that they're doing 40 to 65 events a year, at approximately $8,000 or more, these venues are making $300,000 to $750,000 a year, yet they cannot afford a life safety sprinkler system. I question that. I also question the fact that all these buildings have been inspected, since there's only 12 counties in the state that have enforced the code. There's 87 counties. There's 200-plus venues. That tells me that 75% of these venues have never been inspected at all. So Minreva is a group of venue owners that must not be up to code, or why would they be trying to change the code, the existing code that is already there? The state fire marshal said that when there was in 2017, the state fire marshal estimated that less than 1% of the 100-plus venues in the state have met the state's building and fire codes. According to Dolly's own literature, the county's... I also spoke with a construction law attorney to see if there's anything could be done about this bill. He said, what you're telling me makes no sense. Why would the legislators change a life safety code that has been in effect since 1974? Don't they understand they're opening the state up to multiple multi-million dollar lawsuits when the catastrophe happens? Since you don't know how safe these buildings are, I asked you to vote no on this at this time and have the state fire marshal and Dolly inspect these buildings, starting with the Minerva ones, since they have testified that all their members are up to code and their buildings are up to code, before putting the state at risk and the taxpayers at such a high risk. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Iverson. And so again, Chair Marquardt, I'm going to come back to you this issue of inspection, if you will. Next, we have Wayne Butt. Wayne, if you can come forward, give us your name for the record and provide us with your quick testimony, we'd appreciate it. Mr. Butt.
Good afternoon, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Wayne Butt, and with my wife, Angie, we own the historic Ferber Farm. I'm a retired disabled veteran, owner of the historic Ferber Farm here in rural Minnesota. Please go to www.mnbarnvenues.com and you will see what I've done over the last 5 years working with the state fire marshal and Dolly and what we've come up with and determined what's going on in the state of Minnesota. And as Chad alluded to, less than 1% of the 200 plus barn venues in the state have been inspected and are to code, to include those that have been testifying at the Senate and House committees. I could probably invest $1,000 to your favorite charity in that I would find something wrong with their venues, without a doubt. Who has flames in the barns? I realize there's no flames in the barns, but accidents do happen. Pyrotechnics, sparkler send-offs we always have, those find their way back into the barn. People like to smoke regardless of the no smoking policies. Everyone has the sterno cans underneath their food heating up on top of linen. I've seen linen hanging across the gas burner heaters in these venues. State Fire Marshal and Dolly is assisting with this bill to quickly pass into law, and I question as to why is that. Did they not do their sworn duties in Minnesota by allowing hundreds of old barns to become wedding and event venues without a fire sprinkler system and engineered to protect the guests against snow, wind, and floor loads? Mind you, since August 1 of 2008, and that's the date in this bill that we're going to go back to, the current code states 100-plus guests, you have to install a fire sprinkler system. And this bill is not clarifying that because it's already in the code. What this bill is doing is changing that and giving them a get-out-of-jail card that they don't have to install these systems. When Chad just spoke, he mentioned the numbers they're making that they can afford this, and we can prove it. You're not going to put anyone out of business by not passing this bill. These folks are making a lot of money, and they're successful at it on their lipstick and lawn service barn venues, and they can make it work. In 2018, Fire Marshal reported that in 2017, 13,845 fires cost $128 million in losses. What is an accident? Smoking next to a commercial gas meter. I've seen it at our barn, the sparkler send-off, sterno heaters. This new bill is going to do what? The licensed building officials by Dolly is they're sworn to do and protect the 5 million plus people in the state, not the 180 barn venue owners that are complaining you're going to put them out of business by having to install that. If 15 barn venue owners had to put this system in and as per code, and we did, and we took out a loan to do that, every business owner should be doing the same thing. I sleep well at night. I don't know how these folks do it without a sprinkler system. It's a life-saving feature, and this bill is taking that away from the people from in the state of Minnesota. I'm saddened that the lawmakers are changing the rules for 180 venue owners versus watching out for the safety of over 5 million people in Minnesota. Thank you for your time and giving me the opportunity to speak before this committee. Do the right thing and vote no. Barn venues are not safe, and I can prove that. And these barn venues are going to have a catastrophe, not if, but when, that each of you will have your name assigned to this bill. So please vote no. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mott. So we'll open up to committee discussion, but Representative Marquardt, I promise to circle back to you on some of the questions that have been raised here, the inspections issue, the statewide applicability issue, and anything else you want to add as you've heard some of the testimony here. Chair Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm just going to emphasize again, I'm looking through some of the notes. First of all, this doesn't deal with construction. You're hearing about that barns may or may not be safe. That's not what this bill is about. That could be another bill if you want. Talking about fire code violations, if that's the case, again, that has to be dealt with by the inspectors, but that has nothing to do with a sprinkler system. And we're talking about, these are not homes. These are not multi-family dwellings. These are open air. And we're really looking at safety of lives. And a fire alarm is going to get folks out of the building. Again, the sprinkler system doesn't go off until it's 160 degrees. Sprinkler system may save the structure. It's not going to save lives. And that's the point is, this clarifies, there hasn't been very clear cut. And the problem is there's been different things in different laws that have created some real complex situations for folks. But and I know also there's a dispute among the barn venue owners. And I think you heard some of that. But I think, again, the question to be asked is a quarter to a half $1 million into businesses that really aren't making huge amounts, they operate seasonally, and is that really going to save lives? That is what we're talking about here, is it? I would say it's not a practical use of money. It's not going to save lives. I really don't believe it is. And so members, that's, that's my concern is safety here, but I just think we have to be practical and look at it, whether or not a sprinkler system in a barn like this is going to actually save lives. That's the question.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. We do have three committee members with questions and or comments. Representative Johnson, then Representative Lucero. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Chair Marquardt, I want to thank you for bringing this forward. We had a great conversation this morning up in your office. Members, Representative Marquardt has a number of these venues in this district, and I have even more. I don't know where that number of $300,000 to $500,000 of income a year comes from, but I know none of mine make that. They're lucky to make $75,000 to $80,000. They can have usually one to two events a week, and after all the expenses, some of them hardly ever cover their costs, counting their mortgage payments for the facility they built. Adding $250,000 to $300,000 to $400,000 cost to this, we could never have these venues. In rural Minnesota, sprinkler systems are great when you have static water pressure. But when you don't have that, you have to drill a new well, a 4-inch well for a sprinkler system. You have to run in three-phase wiring. Sometimes that's 3 miles away. I have interruptible power. Now, when the fire department cuts a hole, they might not know where that interruptible power is, and that fireman is electrocuted, especially if it's three-phase. This is not only, as Representative Marquardt stated, they have the fire alarms, so people get out when the alarms go off long before the sprinklers go off. The sprinklers are designed to save the building. Now, I can't remember which testifier talked about the structure of the buildings. We've seen numerous times when we've had bad snowstorms, barns collapsing. but I've looked at the pictures. They're not barns, they're pole sheds. These old barns that they're built to last. As long as they've been used, their structure is solid. They don't fall apart that quick. Many of them are over 100 years old. In fact, the one that Mr. Axel talked about is actually, it's not in my district, but it's in my county. For those of you who don't know, that is the original home place of the Erickson family, which started Holiday gas stations. Started the Erickson's grocery store, which turned into Super Value and Cub. That is a historical, as far as I'm concerned, it's a historical site, not only in Isani County, but in Minnesota. And it's great that these people can visit that site and learn the history of my county. But to the cost to put in these systems is overwhelming, especially without the static water pressure. And for firefighters, it's actually more dangerous than just fighting the fire from the outside should the unfortunate thing happen. Mr. Butts talked about the food being on the cloths and stuff being over open flames, propane bottles inside. If you've seen it in that facility, if I saw stuff like that in a facility I was running, that caterer would no longer be allowed in my building. It's up to the owners to make sure that it is safe. So with that, I do support this. It's a good opportunity. It's good for small businesses in our communities. These are seasonally operated. After expensive, they make $15,000-$20,000 a year. On the positive side, they're doing good. And right now they are struggling because they have not been open for over a year. In fact, one of mine that's actually less than a mile from the Wisconsin border has had people cancel theirs, and they had their services, wedding services in Wisconsin, 3 miles from their facility. So with that, I do support this bill, and I hope everybody does. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Members, we are running behind time here, so let's be as brief as possible. Representative Lucero, followed by Representative O'Neill. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the remainder on the time. And I'll just ask my questions all at once rather than doing one at a time. So I was listening to the description of the justification from Chair Marquardt as to why this bill doesn't necessarily need to apply. And I think there are other types of structures that would fall under the same criteria. I'm thinking of our own church that we built here approximately 10 years ago. Large open space, doesn't have pyrotechnics in it, nobody sleeps in it. One of the questions I would have, and it's rhetorical at this point just because we're running out of time, but would the chair entertain potentially an amendment on the House floor to expand other types of structures that might meet the same criteria that he described, trying to justify why this would not be needed? Another thing that crosses my mind as I was listening to this, and I just heard Representative Johnson, I think, reference that many of these structures are over 100 years old. I've renovated, as a licensed general contractor, I've renovated multiple homes that are over 100 years old. And I'll tell you, when I tear those walls off, you know what's in them? Sawdust. Sawdust insulation. So depending on how these buildings were placed into service right now, there could be a high likelihood that there is sawdust insulation. And guess what happens with sawdust when you put a match to it? It goes up really fast. And so, again, that's just an area of concern. Since, again, these are unique buildings, it's not as if they're being built today. Obviously, some are, right? But if they're 100 years old, they're going to have a different potential risk to them. But then here's the one question I would ask, Mr. Chair, for Chair Marquardt is, and I do very much do understand the cost-benefit analysis, risk, the amount of money that goes into this, but if it could save just one life, wouldn't it be worth it?
Senator Marquardt.
I think, again, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Lucero. First of all, to your first question, I don't know if I would include others until I knew what the impact would be as far as an amendment, so I couldn't promise you that. There are never any guarantees. I mean, we could put ourselves in cellophane wrap, and that might not protect us, and we could walk around all day. But the fact of the matter here is that, think about this, an open structure again, and you've got fire alarms, everything else there, would a sprinkler system save a life? I don't know. I can't say. It certainly doesn't seem practical that it would with everything else, especially with the fire sprinklers going off at about 160 degrees. There'd be plenty of warning. Fire alarms have gone off plenty of times to exit this open air building. I just think you got to think about it. How practical is this for this type of a business to put all this in when I'm not convinced it would save a life?
Very well. Representative O'Neill, and then we'll move to a vote. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have noticed that the state fire marshal is not here to testify either in opposition to the bill or in support of the bill, unless he's there somewhere and we don't know about it. But I'm just wondering if Chair Marquardt would talk about just briefly the state fire marshal's stand, because we heard somebody that, I think it was Roger Axel or something, that was speaking to that, but he isn't the actual state fire marshal today. If Chair Marquardt could speak about it.
Chair Marquardt, to the firefighter.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, I have not been contacted by the fire marshal.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just would make the point that I think if the state fire marshal was adamantly opposed to this bill based on safety, I think they'd be here to testify. I don't see them. I don't hear them. And Chair Marquardt hasn't been reached out to. So. And I don't see any letters in opposition. I don't see anything unless I'm missing something. So I just wanted to make that clear that the state fire marshal hasn't really weighed in for or against. Thank you.
Very well. Chair Marquardt, final 5 seconds before we go to a vote.
I'd appreciate your support. Thanks so much for hearing this.
Thank you. The chair renews his motion to refer House File 1015 to the General Register. The clerk will take the roll.
Mariani.
Aye.
Chair Mariani, aye. Vice Chair Frazier.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frazier, aye. Representative Johnson.
Aye.
Representative Johnson, aye. Representative Edelson.
Aye.
Representative Edelson, aye. Representative Feist.
Aye.
Representative Feist, aye. Representative Grossel.
Aye.
Representative Grossel, aye. Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Representative Hollins, aye. Representative Hewitt.
Aye.
Representative Hewitt, aye. Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, aye.
Representative Cleavorn, aye. Representative Long.
Aye.
Representative Long, aye. Representative Lucero.
Yes.
Representative Lucero, aye. Representative Mueller.
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Mueller, aye. Representative Novotny. Representative Novotny. Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, aye.
Representative O'Neill, aye. Representative Pinto.
Aye.
Representative Pinto, aye. Representative Poston.
Aye.
Representative Poston, aye. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, aye.
Representative Raleigh, aye. Representative Vang.
Aye.
Representative Vang, aye. Representative Zhang, excused. Representative Novotny. That concludes roll call with 17 ayes and 0 nays.
17 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 1015 is referred to the General Register. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Appreciate that. Thank you.
Very well. Members, quick pause here. Just to share with everyone that next week, Friday, we will plan to hear the budget presentations immediately after our regularly scheduled hearing time. So we'll just, extend that out. I believe we're going to extend it out. We're working out the details here in terms of securing the time. So please plan to be available up to as late as 2:30 on Friday. It is certainly my plan not to go that long, but I do want to make sure we have adequate time to hear a good, thorough presentation from the executive branch and to allow for members' questions relative to the budget request. So members, let's hope we can pick up, let's plan to pick up the pace here. House File 2080, Representative Schultz, the chair moves to refer, the chair moves to refer House File 2080 to the General Register. Representative Schultz, your bill is before us.
Thank you, Chair Mariana and members. House File 2080 is a priority for the Department of Revenue, and they are here to testify. What it does is it puts us in federal compliance. We've been out of compliance with background checks and fingerprinting for employees or those we contract with as a state, those individuals who use federal tax information. So this puts us in compliance, and it would affect around 4,000 employees. And with that, I'll turn it over to the testifier from the Department of Revenue, Chair Mariani.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Schultz. And the testifier, if you can please come forward, state your name for the record and give us your very brief but no doubt brilliant testimony. We'd appreciate it. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Mariani, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Alyssa Haugen, Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I am here today on behalf of the Departments of Revenue, Human Services, Employment and Economic Development, and MNSHRE, who rely on federal tax information to perform critical program functions. I'd like to make a few brief remarks, and then I'll be available for any questions. First, thank you to Representative Schultz for carrying this bill on behalf of the Department of Revenue and other agencies that use federal tax information to perform their work. House File 2080 brings Minnesota into compliance with internal revenue service requirements for state and local governments that receive federal tax information. A change made to these requirements within the past few years now requires agencies that use federal tax information to conduct fingerprint background investigations of individuals that have access to this information. The legislation provides affected state agencies with authority to fingerprint individuals and conduct national criminal history record checks of individuals with access to federal tax information. These individuals include current or prospective employees of affected agencies, contractors of these agencies, employees or agents of a contractor with these agencies, and any individual that's otherwise engaged by the agencies that have access to federal tax information, including local governments that support human services programs. Within the last 30 months, a majority of other states have enacted laws regarding fingerprints of individuals with access to federal tax information. These states have completed or are in the process of implementing their fingerprint-based criminal history checks. This legislation is needed for the Department of Revenue and other agencies that use federal tax information to administer their program. For example, at Revenue, we use this information for tax research to develop revenue estimates and by our tax program areas to verify income and compliance with Minnesota's tax laws. At other agencies, this information is used to verify income to confirm program eligibility. Thank you, Chair Mariani and members of the committee. At this point, I'm available for any questions you may have.
Very well. Thank you, Ms. Haugen. I don't see any other testifiers, and so I'll open this up to comments or questions from committee members. Representative Polston.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. This is for Mrs. Haugen. I hope I'm saying that right. I apologize if I didn't. Can you tell me, are you going to need additional employees to do these background checks and what the cost of doing them is going to be?
Ms. Haugen.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. We will not need additional employees. We'll be using the BCA and local law enforcement to do the actual fingerprinting of our employees. And then the agencies have been reviewing, and there is a minimal cost to each agency for the first biennium because it takes about 12 months to receive approval to conduct these checks. We need to get approval from the IRS and FBI before we can proceed. We will have some cost as we begin to conduct the background checks of our employees. And as we learn more about what's needed to sustain the program, we'll be absorbing those costs in the first biennium. And if there are any need for future costs after the first biennium, we would include those requests in our agency operating budget adjustments if that was necessary.
Very well.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Polston. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the author, Representative Schultz, I'm just wondering, I'm seeing that there's no Senate companion, and I'm just wondering what the movement of this is in the Senate. Is somebody going to be authoring it and getting a hearing since we are at second deadline tomorrow?
And Representative Schultz, I've been informed by staff that we're going to have to change our motion to lay this over for possible inclusion to make sure that there is a pathway here. But Representative Schultz.
Yes, thank you for laying it over, Chair Mariani. And I believe it was sent to the Senate, so I will have to check to see why it wasn't dropped. But thank you, Representative O'Neill, for that question.
Very well.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Thank you for changing the motion, because I wasn't quite sure how that was going to work, if it was going to go to the General Register and it wasn't even dropped in the Senate. So I appreciate now I see a possible path, but before I was like, I don't know how this is going to work. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I hear you, Representative O'Neill. Representative Jackson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Schultz. I understand the need for this. The only way to do a true background check on somebody is to make sure who they are is by a fingerprint verification. And they're going to have access to sensitive tax data. So I'm thank you for bringing this forward. It's something that we do need to do, especially for those who have access to that data, as identity theft is a big issue. And if somebody could get their hands on that stuff and use it improperly, it could be very serious for the person that the data is leaked. Thank you.
Very well. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Chair Mariani, and thank you, members, for hearing this bill.
All right, very well. Then the chair changes his motion to, I don't think I need to change the motion. The chair then lays over House File 2080 for possible inclusion in the committee's omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Schultz, for bringing us this bill. And let us know if anything happens over in the other body before we put together an omnibus bill. Thank you. With that, members, we now have House File 2077. Representative Hewitt. Moves to refer House File 2077 to the Ways and Means Committee. Representative Hewitt, your bill is before us.
Thank you, Chair Mariani, and thank you, members. This is a bill that was brought to me by the professional firefighters and others, my two fire chiefs. Basically, it moves the Firefighter Certification Board. Right now, it's comprised of 18 members. The board, it moves it to the State Fire Marshal's office where it really should be, because it is a licensing board, a certification board that we put into place almost 30 years ago, but it's been done by an outside entity. And now this moves it to where it should be within the state, because it is, they should be in charge of the training and up-to-date tactics that firefighters use. Basically, this will take place in 2023 when the current contract expires with the executive director of the current board, and then we'll move over. So we have a number of years to put policy in place. I do have two testifiers, and I believe the fire marshal's office is here for technical questions if there are any. If we could turn to my testifiers now, Chair Mariani.
Great. Well, Representative Hewitt, I see Bart Bervin on the list.
Yes.
Very well. Mr. Bervin, if you can come forward, identify yourself for the record, and give us your quick testimony, we'd appreciate it. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you for having me. Good afternoon. My name is Bart Bervin. I serve as the Minnesota Professional Firefighter Representative on the Minnesota Fire Service Certification Board. I was also chosen by the certification board members to chair a transition committee to work and move towards the state fire marshal's office. The reason for the move to the state fire marshal office was due to a request from Minnesota Fire Service to have one resource to go for all things. The other reason was the timing for our contract and our executive director's retirement. This bill would allow the State Fire Marshal's Office to start the process now and ensure a smooth transition from our current model. and the Transition Committee has held numerous meetings since January of 2019 to include all of our stakeholders and try and meet the needs and requests of everyone. The bill has been discussed, voted upon, and has moved forward by the current certification board, supported by the Minnesota State Fire Chiefs Association, the Minnesota Fire Department Association, and the Minnesota Professional Firefighters. So thank you for your time and consideration regarding House File 2077.
Thank you, Captain Bourbon, for your testimony, and please stick around if you're able to in case there are any questions. Representative Huad, you said you had another testifier?
I believe so. Maybe that's it, though. That was a professional firefighter's testimony, so okay. I can stand for questions now, Chair, to keep the meeting going. I know we're in time crunch.
Very well. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Huad, I understand the concept of this bill. When I first read it, I had concerns, as Minnesota relies heavily on volunteer firefighters across the state. In fact, over 90% of our firefighters in Minnesota are volunteer, with the last 10% either being full-time or paid on call time. When I read this bill, it reminds me of what could happen very easily. It looks like it's a model similar to a post board. And with that model, it'd be pushing towards full-time firefighters across the state with many small cities and small communities. That is not possible, feasible, or viable whatsoever if the cost is just out of sight. They have those men on a full-time schedule with some of them having very few calls in a month. So I do have some concerns on that. Another concern I have is how this is going to be paid for. Representative, if you could tell me what the fee structure is, because I see there's no fiscal note on this, and how it plans to be paid for.
Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Chair Mariani and Representative Johnson. Answering both your questions, one is that is not the intention. As I know, as I was a firefighter too, that there are places in Minnesota that are never going to go full-time because of the cost requirements. But I also think this is going to be a recruitment and retention tool too. And I'll explain that in a second, leading to your next question. Right now, the cities and towns pay for the services of this, which is another reason it probably should be in a state agency. So I get your concerns, and I would love to work with you as this more evolves towards 2023. You and I definitely have the same questions, and I'm a real big supporter of volunteer fire departments. There's so much pride in many of them, and I know we're short right now on recruitment and retention, and I kind of think this will help us with that area too. So I look forward to working together with you in the future.
Well, thank you, Senator Huad. And quite frankly, just a quick commentary, another good recruitment and retention and support would be doing something like the Hometown Heroes, especially because so many of our firefighters are volunteers and there's a big hole and a gap relative to their medical counseling insurance needs as well. Representative Johnson?
Chair Mariani, Representative Hewitt, currently the budget for the current board is about $600,000 a year. So for now we're looking at, for a biennium, it's $1.2 million. I do think you need to get a fiscal note before this bill gets to Ways and Means, just to verify so we know what the actual costs are going to be. So that is one concern I have. And the other concern I have is back when I was first got in the fire department is when this current board was set up in the early to mid 80s. The reason that was set up because the state ran it at that time and they ran it so poorly. They had 14 different vocational technical schools that taught different stuff. They weren't on the same page. and the chiefs got together to make sure all the training got to be on the same page. We also have, I think, 14 different regional fire districts, but only five are going to be on that board. All five could be from a metro area, and greater Minnesota firefighting is totally different than metro firefighting. So I think we need to look at that, who's actually on the board, and putting this together. And I'm a little disappointed. We have almost 2 years before the contract up with the executive director. I'm just wondering, you don't need to answer this, why they haven't started the search to replace that executive director instead of go this route. Just some questions I'm thinking to myself, and I'll be asking those questions to the people I have contact with as well. Right now, I'll support this reluctantly, because I want to make sure when we do it right. And I hope you can get a fiscal note before it comes into Ways and Means. Thank you.
Representative, you had no question there, but offer you an opportunity to comment. If not, we'll go to the next question.
Yeah, do we have another question, or should we close it?
We do, yes.
Okay, let me go ahead with the next question, and then I can close with the comment.
Very well. Thank you, sir. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hewitt. So I've been contacted by some folks in my local fire departments here who are primarily volunteer. Both Buffalo and Monticello, well, all three, Buffalo, Monticello, and Maple Lake actually have very large fire departments, and they service, Wright County is a big, big county, 140,000 residents, and we just had a festival here in Maple Lake, and one of the firemen told me that they had 420 calls for service last year. So they're pretty busy, volunteer though. But they were really concerned about this move forward and concerned about their ability to recruit more volunteer firemen, the cost that this would have, the cost to train. They had a lot of concerns, and they said they were not alone, that is a far-reaching concern here in greater Minnesota. So I'm going to be a no on this bill to support my local community because they are opposed to this bill. And I would really, really, really ask you, please, Representative Hewitt, reach out to the Greater Minnesota Chiefs and hear their concerns very clearly. And if this is going to move forward, make sure that their voices are included, because I think right now there's great fear that this is very metro-centric and that Greater Minnesota is not really being listened to. And there's a lot of pressure for Greater Minnesota to accept this as it is. So I know that that you'll listen to those concerns, Representative Hewitt, and that as this moves forward, because obviously my one vote isn't going to stop this bill, but I'm going to be a no vote because I have tremendous concerns, and I want to make sure that the fire chiefs in Greater Minnesota are respected and listened to. So if you would commit to that, it would put my mind at ease just a bit. But for right now, I'm a no.
All right. Representative Hewitt, you can give us your closing responses and then comments on the bill, and then we'll move to a vote.
Thank you, Chair Mariani, and thank you, Representative Johnson and Representative O'Neill, for those words. I want you to know directly, and this speaks more towards Representative O'Neill, has been studying the EMS problem we have in rural America, rural Minnesota, as well as the fire situation. You got my guarantee that I would not be on a bill that in any way hampers rural Minnesota, because I know how important it is for recruitment and retention. And as this moves forward till 2023, and I talked to the fire marshal about this, he also guaranteed that he will also make sure it's a fair balance of rural and metro. And so that was my concern, so I pushed hard on it, and I will continue to push hard. And Representative Johnson, I just want to speak quickly. You know what? Back in those days, I was part of the fire service too. And you know what the difference was between then and now and when the state ran it? Is they didn't have you and I. And that's the big difference, because they have knowledgeable people with such great places now with you and I on this. We're going to make sure this gets done right together. I appreciate that. And that, I close, Chair Mariani, and hope to go forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Always good to have the practitioners at a central place in terms of how we move forward with our delivery of services. All right, members, with that, Representative Hewitt renews his motion that House File 2077 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. The clerk will take the roll. Aye.
Chair Mariani, aye. Vice Chair Frazier? Excused. Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Johnson, aye. Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Edelson, aye. Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Feist, aye. Representative Grossel?
Aye.
Representative Grossel, aye. Representative Hollins?
Aye.
Representative Hollins, aye. Representative Hewitt?
Aye.
Representative Hewitt, aye. Representative Cleavorn?
Aye.
Representative Cleavorn, aye. Representative Long?
Aye.
Representative Long, aye. Representative Lucero? Representative Lucero? Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes aye.
Representative Mueller, aye. Representative Novotny?
Novotny, aye.
Representative Novotny, aye. Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, no.
Representative O'Neill, nay. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Representative Pinto, aye. Representative Poston?
Aye.
Representative Poston, aye. Representative Raleigh?
Raleigh, aye.
Representative Raleigh, aye. Representative Vang?
Aye.
Representative Vang, aye. Representative Zhang, excused. Representative Lucero?
Yes.
Representative Lucero, aye. That concludes roll call with 16 ayes and one nay.
Okay, with 16 ayes and one nay, the motion prevails. And House File 2077 is referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative Hewitt, and to the testifiers. Next, we have House File 515. Representative Igel, 911 telecommunicator working group issue. The chair will move to refer House File 515 to the Ways and Means Committee. Representative Igel, welcome to the committee. I think this might be your first stop ever in the committee. You're most welcome. Your bill is before us. You do have an author's amendment. Do you wish the chair to move that amendment at this point?
Yeah, I'll move the amendment, please.
Very well. So, Chair moves adoption of the A1 amendment. Representative, and this is basically putting the bill in the shape that you wish to have it before us. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah. So the A1 amendment will just get the bill in the shape to accompany the Senate file with the bill. So it's just going to be adding a few stipulations that came up when I went through Senate Judiciary. So just a quick, easy amendment.
And a good, efficient way to move legislation as well. Representative Johnson, you're okay with a voice vote?
Yes, I am.
Very well. All in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Same sign. Motion prevails, and the A1 amendment is adopted at the House File 515. Representative Igel, your bill is before us.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, yes, yeah, so the 515 bill creates a 911 dispatchers working group. This working group would be to establish and define what telecommunication is for dispatching. It would also work to set minimum training standards for the state, and then would also talk about the funding and standards for certification for the working group. So this working group takes apart of many different agencies and groups around the state, puts them together in a working group so they can create the standards that work for them. And this is, like I said, a public safety issue so that our telecommunicators, our dispatchers, can properly keep all of our communities safe because they are essential to public safety and making sure that dispatch is handled properly. So with me today, I have a few testifiers who will kind of speak more to this issue. And why it's so important that we act on this today and get this this bill moving forward. So I guess if you want, Chair, I can introduce the first.
That would be wonderful, please.
So my first testifier is Darlene Pankoki.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Pankoki. Please state your name for the record and give us your precise, concise testimony here today. But welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Okay. Yes, I call you saying short and brilliant. So here we go.
Here we go.
Yeah. And my camera's not working. I apologize. I meant to be here on video too, but good afternoon. My name is Darlene Pankoni. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for letting me testify today. I represent both the Minnesota chapters of the Association of Public Safety Communications Officials and the National Emergency Number Association. I have provided a written testimony which supports the need for all 5 points of House File 515. Representatives, 911 was created 53 years ago. Since that time, the individuals answering those calls have become the backbone of the public safety system. There is not a law enforcement, fire, or EMS incident that occurs without their support and vital communication. These dedicated individuals, known as the first responders, have waited decades to be officially recognized as public safety responders, to be given an adequate training foundation to support their necessary, expansive knowledge base, to be certified for their multifaceted skill set, and finally, to be provided the benefits to sustain and protect them for their life-saving service to the community. Mr. Chair, representatives, thank you for your time today, and I hope you all support this very important bill.
Very well. Thank you, Ms. Panconi. Please stick around if you're able to, in case there are some questions.
Yes, sir.
Representative Igel, you have another testifier as well?
Yes, I also have with me today Lieutenant Mark Lalek. He is the Itasca County Lieutenant in charge of dispatch. If you want to say
something. Welcome to the committee, Lieutenant Lalek. If you can please state your name for the record and give us your testimony, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. My name is Mark Lalek. I'm the Lieutenant of Communications for Itasca County. I do not have a statement. I did send a supplemental that I had handed out about 3 years ago to Representative Sandy Lehman along with Amy Klobuchar and some others. It was commented on both in support. We kind of move forward from there. So I hope you read that, and I will stand by for any questions.
Okay, very well. Representative Igel, there are a couple of amendments, so why don't we take those up, and then we'll open up for general discussion on the bill. I see an A2 amendment. Is someone offering the A2 amendment? I see no takers for the A2 amendment. And there is an A3 amendment, but the A3 amendment is to the A2 amendment, so it can't be offered unless someone offers the A2 amendment. All right. Why don't we open up for general discussion, members? Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Igel, thank you for doing this. And I want to give a big thank you to Ms. Panconi and Lieutenant Lalek. I've sat in dispatch as an officer when I was dealing with a minor injury where I couldn't be on the road. Seeing how they work and what they do, they are the front line and the most, one of the most important assets to public safety. Words cannot express my gratitude and for what they do and what they put up with. It's unbelievable, and the skill set that they have to have. I am so thankful that this bill is being brought forward, the getting them properly trained is one of the most valuable things we can do. They are essential personnel as far as I am concerned, because without them, we're out, the other officers and the fire departments and the EMS, they're blind trying to find things. They get the good information, but in order to get the information they need, they have to know what to ask, and the training really does that. There's also other certifications to get into NCIs, into different background checks and different services at both state and federal levels, and this training can help make sure that they get the proper certifications they need. So when they do start their first job, they're miles ahead of where they are compared to somebody just coming off the streets. And again, thank you. I strongly support this bill.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Johnson. Representative Molly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am wondering about the costs of this project, and I'm wondering if Dana Wahlberg would be available to answer the question of what the costs are on this, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wally, Raleigh, goodness, and who is Dana Walbert?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I am Dana Wahlberg. I'm the director of the Emergency Communication Networks Division of the Department of Public Safety for the state of Minnesota.
Well, welcome to the committee, Director Wahlberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Raleigh.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm wondering, Ms. Wahlberg, if you could address the issue of the costs of this bill, please, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Wahlberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Raleigh. ECN has prepared a fiscal note in preparation of this bill, and we are prepared within the ECN office to provide the necessary support to allow the work group to meet, and we will take care of the administrative roles and functions and assist with the final report that is due to come out in January of 2022.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With that testimony, Mr. Chair, I would like to explore the idea of, instead of it going to Ways and Means, that this gets referred to the General Register, Mr. Chair.
Representative Raleigh, actually, we're going to move to lay this over to consider it as inclusion in the omnibus bill, which then gives us both the time but also the appropriate venue to address any cost issues within the target of this committee.
Not sure how to respond to that, Mr. Chair, other than thank you very much.
I did see someone else's hand up, but I think it went down. Anyone else wish to comment at this time? All right, well, Representative Igel, thoughts here?
Yeah, you know, in kind of closing here, thank you again for the hearing today, Mr. Chair and members. I really can't urge enough how important this bill is. You know, as we've seen, our dispatchers are that front line of for all of us in our communities, right? Whether it be medical emergency, whether it be public safety emergency, our dispatchers need to know how to keep us all safe. And I can't think of a better way than for a group of dispatchers to come together and work together to create the standards, trainings, and procedures that work for them, and then return to us to tell them what they need. So, I thank you today, and hope maybe we could consider Representative Raleigh's motion that we could get this moved to the General Register, because this is a now issue. This is a concern we need desperately right now in our state. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Igel.
Mr. Chair?
And I do, hold on a second. I do want to comment, I didn't do it earlier, that with your A1 amendment, it certainly put me in a much more comfortable place relative to your bill. I think the Senate did a good thing in terms of adding, folks on the ground, into the group as well. I did hear a voice from Representative Huat.
Mr. Chair, I had an A2 amendment on this.
Okay, Representative, yeah, I called out earlier, but perhaps you might have stepped out. No, it's quite all right. There is an A2 amendment. Representative Huat, you wish to move that then?
I do.
All right, Representative Huat moves adoption of the A2 amendment. Representative Huat, to your amendment, and then there is an A3 amendment to the amendment, but let's hear about your amendment first, and then we'll move to the A3 amendment if anyone wishes to move that. Representative Huat.
I apologize for that, Mr. Chair. A2 amendment basically just states that the task force should also consider looking at other situations such as incident command. Right now, it follows the military or the DNR command structure. There's other ones in Europe and stuff that they should also just start to consider. We should start looking at these as we move a lot of these task force forward.
All right, and there is an A3 amendment. Is that yours as well, Representative Huat, or is someone else moving
the A3? Chair Mariani, that would be mine.
All right, Representative Johnson moves the A3 amendment. Representative Johnson, to your amendment.
With the A2 amendment, it starts talking about things that are going on in other states, which we do, which law enforcement does do. and in dispatch, or not so much in dispatch, but law enforcement does do. Fire does that as well. I think EMS looked at what's going on. But really, what really got me concerned is when you started looking at what's going on across the world. And I want to make sure that our responses that we do actually follow the Constitution of not only the United States, but of the state of Minnesota, because each state has a different constitution. And other countries have different, a lot of countries really don't have a constitution that they follow. So I want to make sure that the rights of the not only the citizens, but the employees are also protected. That's why I have this amendment.
Very well.
And then as this goes forward, I'd also like to speak on the amendment itself.
Okay, very well. Representative Yuan, to the amendment to your amendment.
I have no problem with that as, I have no problem with that as, again, this is just something to look at outside the box a little bit, as we should be doing with everything, but this directs it that that's it. So I'm fine with that, Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson.
Very well. So Representative Huat is willing to accept this amendment. Representative Johnson, do you want a roll call, or is a voice vote good enough here?
Voice vote is fine.
All right. And I would join you in support of the amendment as well. Is there any further discussion on the amendment to the amendment? I do see Senator Rowley, was your hand up prior?
Prior, Chair.
Okay, all right, very well. Let's do the vote here then. All in favor of the A3 amendment, please say aye.
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 All same sign. Motion prevails, and the A2 amendment is amended with the A3 amendment. Now we have the A2 amendment as amended before us. Representative Johnson, you wanted to speak to the A2 amendment?
Yes, I was to speak to the A2 amendment, Chair Mariani. I'm looking at this amendment, and this amendment really has nothing to do with recommendations for training for emergency dispatchers. This board that's being put together would have nothing to do with that. This actually goes into best practices as far as for incident command. Dispatchers aren't involved in incident command. They're the calling point. They're the initial point. Sheriffs and police chiefs, commissioner of public safety, colonel for the state patrol. Those are the ones that can make these decisions, not the dispatchers. This bill deals with just training for dispatchers. So I don't know why this is here other than I won't say why it's here. I have my own suspicions. But for that, I would recommend a no vote on this amendment because it doesn't belong in the training of dispatchers.
Representative Yuan?
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson. I understand your concerns, but even down to the first responder level, we are all trained in incident command. Dispatchers are trained. They might not be in command, but they are definitely trained in it. So as we're setting up new curriculum for training and EMS fire, I think this is just a consideration we need to look at. They are definitely trained in it. They have to understand it. We all have to understand it and know where it is. So I would respectively disagree that this would not be part of their criteria for training.
Very well. Representative Rowley, to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the author of the amendment, NIMS is a part of our National Incident Management System, and it's a coordinated incident management system, as you well know. We've had conversations in the past. I have trouble with this amendment because I do not believe that the language that's included is actually germane, because what it calls out, and I'm looking at line 1.4, recommended best practices in incident response command structure. Now, a structure of an incident command system is the way that you put together, like the incident commander, your various units, so all the way down to the individual responder of a particular resource. So it goes incident commander, public information officer, safety officer, logistics, and all of those. The reason I mention that is because ICS, or the Incident Command System, is a standardized hierarchical structure that allows for the response to take place. So if we're talking about ICS or the incident command system, and we look at that globally, ICS has been around for a little over 30 years. It was born out of the fires that happened in California. And it deals with things like hazardous materials, responding to car crashes, you name it. It's very comprehensive. However, in and of itself, it was born in the United States of America. And ICS, even though it's widely recognized in places like the United Kingdom, the United Nations recognizes it. New Zealand has an incident command system that they've used in conjunction with the coordinated incident command system in Australia. So New Zealand looks to Australia, but all of them look to the United States because we implemented the incident command system. So, Mr. Chair, I don't believe that this amendment is ready for a yes vote because there is, in my professional opinion, no such thing as an incident response command structure that needs to be reviewed, because that would be reviewing whether or not there's an incident commander and then subordinate units. If the amendment had said an incident command system to be reviewed across the planet, it would be then germane. But Mr. Chair, I would submit that this amendment is not ready it's not ready for a yes vote because it's not germane to this particular bill, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Rowley, so you're raising a point in committee about germaneness in the bill?
I believe it's germaneness because of the word incident response command structure. And the structure is how you put together an incident command system. And so if we're going to include a structure, then we're telling the committee that this bill would create that they must study the way that incident command structures, which are standardized across the incident command system, need to be put together. It would be a redundant redundancy. And I hate to put it that way, but that's what this bill, or that's what this amendment is calling for, is a study of how the structure of an incident command system would go together. And that's well-defined, and it's well-entrusted for the past 30-plus years.
Well, Representative Rowley, I think I follow the logic there, but I it's the chair's opinion that this amendment is germane. It certainly is in keeping with the intent of the drafter, as captured by the words here, where the current language, it talks about other recommendations the working group deems appropriate. That's a pretty broad, scope of review. We're only looking at recommended best practices in the amended language. There's certainly time, and I would certainly encourage members to work together to hone in on the language further if that's the desire. But at this point, I think the amendment is perfectly germane.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I may,
yes.
I would ask the author of the amendment then, can he define what an incident command response or an incident response command structure is and how that would help this working group outside of what the recommendations of NIMS and the ICS is? Mr. Chair.
Representative Hewlett, quickly, we have one more bill here.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Raleigh, you've actually made my point of other structures being around the world, which is good. And then on top of that, understand that as we move forward in EMS, fire, police, and there's reform going on in all those areas, that the structure could look differently. We're going to be bringing mental health practitioners into the first response level as we move through this committee and as we move through others. And that's what I kind of need us to think about. The world of this is going to probably change for all of us, and to understand that the current structure designates only law enforcement to be in command of most scenes other than fire. And I don't know if that's going to change or where it's going to go, but I'm glad we're having this discussion. I'd like to move forward with this to have more. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Raleigh, last words here.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just wondering, I mean, it may even satisfy this particular amendment if we remove the word command structure and say incident command system. Because again, I'm looking at the plain language of NIMS and FEMA and their guidance. The eighth principle of ICS is plain language. And if we're going to follow NIMS and ICS, we should have plain language in the bills that we're crafting. Mr. Chair, you asked for final words, and those are my final words.
No, I do not sense any, you know, for lack of a better word, hostility in your inquiry.
Yeah, no, not at all, sir.
At all. My advice would be that if the amendment goes on, we're going to have time to continue to work, and I would certainly encourage you and Representative Edwards and I go to work on the language before we bring it back, before the committee. Representative Igo, I apologize as the author of the bill. You obviously should comment on any amendment. So, Representative Igo.
I really appreciate the discussion that was just had there. You know, I think it really does kind of outline just how important it is that we do let these guidelines get created for dispatchers. And I want to reiterate, too, like you mentioned, Chair Mariani, you know, we've already had a lot of compromise on this bill and working forward to add all these different structures so that this group, this working group, that, you know, doesn't have a fiscal note, may I add, is going to be able to create the plan that works for the state of Minnesota. So in regards to this amendment, if this is something that needs to happen so this bill moves to the general register, that I understand. But I also see both points from Representative Hewitt and Representative Raleigh, and that's kind of where I stand on this amendment.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Engel. Members, Representative Hewitt renews his motion to adopt the E2 amendment. As amended, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani.
Aye.
Chair Mariani, aye. Vice Chair Frazier.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frazier, aye. Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Johnson, nay. Representative Edelson.
Aye.
Representative Edelson, aye. Representative Feist.
Aye.
Representative Feist, aye. Representative Grossel.
No.
Representative Grossel, nay. Representative Hollins?
Aye.
Representative Hollins, aye. Representative Hewitt?
Aye.
Representative Hewitt, aye. Representative Cleavorn?
Cleavorn, aye.
Representative Cleavorn, aye. Representative Long?
Aye.
Representative Long, aye. Representative Lucero?
No.
Representative Lucero, nay. Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes no.
Representative Mueller, nay. Representative Novotny?
Novotny, no.
Representative Novotny, nay. Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, no.
Representative O'Neill, nay. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Representative Pinto, aye. Representative Poston?
No.
Representative Poston, nay. Representative Raleigh?
Raleigh, nay.
Representative Raleigh, nay. Representative Vang?
Aye.
Representative Vang, aye. Representative Zhang, excused. That concludes roll call with 10 ayes and 8 nays.
With 10 ayes and 8 nays, the motion prevails, and the A2 amendment as amended is amended onto House File 515. Representative Igo, very final quick seconds. We have one other bill. It's a good bill. I want to make sure we act on it, and then the chair is going to lay this bill over.
Well, like I said, thank you again, Mr. Chair, for hearing this bill today and hearing this conversation. Like I said, I can't emphasize enough how important this bill is to the state of Minnesota and our dispatchers who desperately need this ability to create their own standards to keep us all safe. This is a public safety issue, and we really need this to happen as quickly as possible. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Igo. The chair lays over House File 515 as amended for possible inclusion into the committee's omnibus bill. Members, last bill, House File 1482, Representative Frankie. Representative Frankie, welcome to the committee. The chair moves to refer House File 1482 to the general register. And Representative Frankie, there is an author's amendment, so the chair will move to amend 1482 unless you stop me with the A1 amendment. Representative Johnson, a voice vote is okay with the author's amendment?
That'd be fine.
Very well. All in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Aye. Motion prevails, and 1482 as amended stands before us. Representative Frankie, we only have minutes, five to be precise. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Mariani. Thank you, members, for hearing this bill. I will forego a lot of the formalities here. I just want to start by thanking Representative Hewitt for co-authoring this bill with me, as there are only two petroleum refineries in the state of Minnesota, one in my district and one in Representative Hewitt's district. I do have two testifiers, Mr. Chair, I will just note that this is not a new bill. This is not as a result of any recent revelation. This is something that I dropped before and has been dropped subsequently that we have been hoping to get through for some time due to what we feel we want to have as a community consistency and safety within our communities revolving around these petroleum refineries. So with that, I will end. And I have Mayor of Newport, Lori Elliott, as a testifier, and Matt Foss, who is a 20-plus year employee and fire mechanic from one of the refineries. So if you would like to just go straight to them, Mr. Chair, that would be great.
Fantastic. We're honored to have you with us, Mayor. Lori Elliott, please come forward, state your name for the record. And as you probably already heard, we're pressed on time, so your conciseness will be deeply appreciated. Welcome, Mayor.
Thank you very much, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lori Elliott, as stated, and I'm the mayor of Newport. Thank you for your time today. My first point is that our volunteers have full-time jobs and other responsibilities, and firefighting is not their main focus. Secondly, they have limited training for this type of a facility that has catastrophic potential for either a large fire or an explosion. And these events will make national news, and I want Minnesota to shine in our response to something like this. Our volunteers were invited to send one volunteer a year for 1 week of training in Texas on refinery firefighting. We have 20 to 25 volunteers. It would take us about a quarter of a century to get everybody up to speed, if you can remember your training that long. This bill assures our crews are the backup to fully trained firefighters that are well educated on the facility. That improves safety for our volunteers. It reduces the potential for injury and death, and leads to better outcomes for the business owner and the community surrounding the refinery, as well as all the people involved. My last point is that this bill assures that there are changes in business ownership, business management, or management philosophy, the refineries will always have a firefighting crew and not just fire leadership and volunteers to respond to events. In closing, doing what I can do to maximize the safety of our volunteers is mission critical, and I fully support this bill, and I encourage you to support it as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Elliott. Appreciate your testimony. Appreciate your presence with us here today. We have Matthew James Foss. Mr. Foss, if you can come forward, state your name for the record, and give us your testimony. We'd appreciate it.
Good afternoon, Chair Mariana and committee members. My name is Matt Foss, and I have been at the St. Paul Park Oil Refinery for 22 years as a fire mechanic and rescue squad lieutenant. I'm here to tell you today how important it is to have a trained, qualified, full-time department at an oil refinery. Industrial firefighting is different than municipal firefighting. Many chemical fires at a refinery can turn steel into spaghetti in less than 5 minutes. These types of fire require immediate response from personnel with experience firefighting chemical fires. The St. Paul Park refinery changed from a full-time department to a volunteer model on January 15th, 2020. A full-time fire team meant that issues could be addressed quickly before they became more severe. Since the elimination of a full-time fire program, I have seen more incidents become higher-level events. This poses additional risk to the workers and to the surrounding communities. An oil refinery is a dangerous place to work. If an incident gets out of hand, it could have devastating effects, not only to the workers, but the surrounding communities. I know from experience that a robust, full-time fire department can mitigate that risk. Thank you for your time. I urge you to support this important bill.
Thank you, Mr. Foss, for your testimony and for your work in this critical and dangerous area. With that, members, questions? Representative Hewitt, I see your name, your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Frankie, for bringing this bill. This is so important for both your oil refinery and mine. I know there's been shared incidences of when Marathon had a spill into the river, that both departments actually worked together with the neighboring fire departments to deal with that. Those are the severities that could turn into major devastating situations if we do not have full-time people at the readiness. The interesting thing that I see about St. Paul Park's refinery versus mine is St. Paul Park sit right in a neighborhood, in fact, in Representative Frankie's neighborhood, and that's major, that's people that can lose their lives on one slip-up. So, members, this is so important that we support this bill and move forward. And again, Representative Frankie, thank you so much, and I want to thank the St. Paul Park Fire Department and those workers at the refinery for their hard work and their dedication. But you're right, we need to make sure you're safe. Thank you.
All right, very well. Anyone else on the committee? All right, Representative Frankie, we're going to be moving to lay this over. Any closing comments, encouragements, et cetera?
I just want to thank you once again, Chair Mariani, and members for hearing this important bill to my community and Representative Hewitt's. You know, one thing that I need to state is this is for an ongoing commitment to safety within our communities, that the people that live in these communities know that there is going to be that commitment to safety. You know, one of the issues is that this refinery over here has changed hands over four times in the last 14, 15 or so years. And every time it changes hands, there's new ownership, there's new management, the philosophies change, and it's hard to keep up with that. So by instituting a bill like this, we are making sure that we are making that commitment to that safety so that no matter who takes over, who owns the facility, they understand our commitment to keeping the community safe. So thank you again, Mr. Chair and members.
Important bill, Representative Frankie. I live close to your refinery. At least I drive by it quite often. So this is also upfront and personal for many of my constituents as well. All right, very well. Thank you all for your testimony. The chair lays over House File 1482 as amended for possible inclusion in the committee's omnibus bill, which we will be putting together in the next 2 weeks. All right, members, before we adjourn, I just want to remind again everyone this Friday for an extended, but the following Friday, I'll look to stand corrected by my staff, as I mentioned earlier. I also want to recognize all our emergency responders in our state. As today we chose that theme for presenting these bills. We have a number of members who are have been or are part of our emergency responder community in the state, including Representative Hewitt. And so just tip of the hat to you all for your work to help keep us safe. And Representative Johnson as well has also served in that capacity, serving the state of Minnesota. So members.
Chair Mariani.
Yes, Representative Johnson.
I also too would like to thank all the first responders, our firefighters, our EMS. And what a lot of people don't realize in greater Minnesota, many of our firefighters and many of our EMS are also our local law enforcement. So I want to thank all of them.
Very well, much appreciated. All right, members, until our next scheduled meeting tomorrow at 10:30, this committee stands adjourned.